Welcome, everyone. We're really glad to have you with us today. We'll do some introductions here in a moment, but our focus today will be a webinar on how to understand how SEO contributes to your marketing mix. I'm just going to dive right in, and I think that as we go, Grant and I have a lot to cover today, but we're also hopeful to wrap with some room to field questions from you. At the end, you can post questions in the chat, and we'll do our best to answer them. We certainly want to continue the conversation with each and every one of you after today's webinar, if it makes sense. But to just jump right in, I want to introduce myself. I'm Paul Knipe. I'm Senior Account Director at Healthcare Success. I focus a lot on both brand strategy, brand development, and the execution of our digital marketing campaigns, particularly paid search, paid social, and SEO. Grant, you want to say hello?
Sure. And I'm Grant Simmons on the East Coast of the US. I am very focused on the SEO side. So looking at how we can promote, invigorate, or otherwise cause success through organic traffic for our customers and clients.
Thanks, Grant. We'll just dive right in with a quick recap. Healthcare Success has had a great series this summer of other SEO webinars. If you've been able to see these, that's great. If you're interested, we had two in June and July, SEO for the C-suite and how to win first place on Google. We will make today's webinar available after the call, but if you'd like to access these webinars, you can visit healthcaresuccess.com and you can view our webinars page to view these previous sessions. We'll also be adding today's session to that list. So let's start off. I think let's give a primer on SEO and the basics of our marketing mix, and Grant will lead things off.
Sure. All right. So a lot of people understand what SEO is, but Google itself quotes SEO as being search engine optimization is often about making small modifications to parts of your website. When viewed individually, these changes might seem like incremental improvements. When combined, they could have a noticeable impact on the site's user experience and performance in organic search results. There's two massive things there that Google talks about: user experience as being really key. So SEO is certainly about improving user experience and performance. So performance meaning organic traffic, but they're also looking at, you know, performance from a standpoint of rankings as well. I like to say, so that was obviously Google speaking there, I like to say the best content is content that satisfies a user's informational needs, because not only is it about answering the question that people have when they type into Google, but it's also about being helpful, addressing the intent they have, and making sure that content is easily consumed. And that means fast and frictionless. Now, I added a link in there to Google's SEO starter guide. It is a great reference to understand the key components of SEO, but I just wanted to cover what SEO is. Next slide, please. So what this presentation is about how SEO integrates with the different marketing channels you might be employing within your organization. You know, the consumer journey is no longer a linear, you know, a linear path from point A to point B. It used to be, you know, in the traditional marketing, a user would see something on TV, normally on television after a program commercial. Then they would go to a store and they would buy it. They would experience it. And then they would either promote it or they'd say, I don't like it anymore. But today in the digital realm, we find that consumers have lots of touch points. And that can be from online advertising. It can be from traditional media like TV, out of home and things like that. But where SEO definitely helps is that people are always looking for information. Google is this massive answer engine. People are looking for information. So there's many touch points in the research process and in the satisfaction process and in the reviews process where people actually, you know, are searching within Google. So Google actually calls this the zero moment of truth or micro moments, which are the moments when people are actually searching for information that helps on their purchase journey. All right. So are patients actually making decisions online? Well, what we can do is look at the data. Now, Google receives more than 1 billion health questions a day. That's a lot. They break it down, 70,000 health-related searches a minute, and that is 7% of the total searches on Google, which obviously is in the billions. So people are definitely searching online to find answers to their questions. Now, that zero moment of truth, that point, that micro moment when people are searching is generally around researching your product, service, a treatment, you know, kind of looking at, you know, what their conditions might be for social proof or to get an understanding of how they're feeling. But really, that research and information gathering happens online and it's broad. It can be everywhere from searching for a particular practice location to searching for reviews on a doctor. And so those kind of decisions are made consciously and subconsciously. So it's either reinforcing the fact that they like something already, or it's close to their home or location, or it's reinforcing the fact of maybe I shouldn't go to this person because I only have 2 stars. So knowing that patients and prospects are searching online and making their decisions from information they find online is really important. So SEO at its foundation facilitates the visibility of content for discovery at that moment of search. And that's moment of decision, whether it's, like I say, positive, negative, or dig deeper. So yes, patients are definitely making decisions online. So what information are they searching for? So generally their decisions are influenced, as I said, by online reviews, patient testimonials, case studies or outcomes to help them understand what the potential impact of any kind of treatment might be. The detailed product or service information around the treatments. It's not like the old days where users go into a doctor's office and that's the first time they've heard of a specific procedure. They're actually doing the research beforehand and will anticipate often questions that doctors are asking them, and they'll be prepared, a lot more prepared. And you can see here, there's a lot of studies around this, but with all these searches that Google has, so 100 billion searches a month, you know, 70% of US adults report using the internet for health-related questions, like how is Zika transmitted, symptoms, you know, itchy rash on elbow, just so they can do this self-diagnosis, or behavioral intentions like quitting smoking. All these things were historically questions you would ask in a doctor's office or in a hospital. Now, users are finding this information online from trustworthy sources. And the great thing is SEO helps elevate your content and great content so that users can find it, not just on your website, but they can find it, you know, in other information like video on YouTube or things like that. So that zero moment of truth, making sure the right information is put in front of the customer at the right time, is really important. So this whole goal of showing up in search results is really about getting to the next step or engaging. And more often than not, that's about making appointments, you know, or actually looking for directions to come to a particular practice or hospital. So Google did a study on hospitals, and it was, you know, what influences hospital selection. Now, a lot of people said to me when I posed a question to them, I said, well, you're just going to choose the closest hospital. But that's not actually the case. You know, users will look at the ratings of the hospital, you know, obviously what they offer and everything else, and make a decision based on that. 84% of the folks in an actual Google study, you know, said they use online and offline resources for hospital research. You know, search drives nearly 3 times as many visitors to hospital sites compared to non-search visitors. So they might be searching offline and looking up the old yellow pages or things like that. Well, search is much more effective at getting that engagement. Now, patients primarily search on symptoms and conditions. Not a surprise. This self-education is an ongoing thing where, you know, people really want to understand what they're getting into. And once again, it used to be questions you ask your doctor. Now you ask Google. And the amazing thing is 44% of patients who research hospitals on a mobile device went on to schedule an appointment. That is a pretty high conversion rate, a pretty high engagement rate, a pretty high intent rate. And so definitely we think there's value in being able to show up for search SEO is one of those channels that lets you do it. Paul. So I'll say this. I was going to say, Paul, did you have anything to add to that at all?
Well, we'll get to this in a moment, but I really think that when we think about the mix of channels and we think about the ways that someone builds a profile in their mind of not only the journey that Grant walked through, how they gather the information necessary to come in with an informed point of view versus the old way of doing things. It'll be important, I think, in this discussion day to talk about how they gather that, because search is a part of it, but it certainly comes from other sources as well.
Got it. So I wanted to talk very briefly about the SEO benefits of the content, because we've talked a lot about content and that research process. So SEO, you know, it's not just about the technical side, but it's basically about ideating the right content based on user intent, creating that content so it's aligned with search engine best practices and allows people to actually find it, presents the content in a way that's understood by both users and search engines. That's kind of the format of a page and potentially some of the technical. And then really, it actually serves content in a frictionless and fast experience. So SEO helps to make sure that the content is served up great, because search engines love to serve up great content. They define great content by fulfills the user's intent, and it is frictionless as far as it's really easy to consume. So some of the other stuff from the SEO standpoint, we also look at how we promote content. So how do we get content out on the web so it's found not just on our website, but on other websites as well? And that could be like, you know, guest posts or getting featured on a TV website or something like that. Will you be found off your site? And so SEO also helps in that promotion side as well.
It's important, I think, just to close that content piece, that we're excited to kind of go through some of the dynamics and the mechanics of what good content best practices are with SEO. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But as I mentioned, I think that when we talk about marketing channels, certainly when you think about how every channel functions in the minds of a patient or a consumer when they're researching, when they're trying to determine the best content sources, it doesn't come from one place. We'll speak about branding in a moment, because brand authority, brand equity will play a big role in how someone consumes information, what they deem credible versus otherwise. Obviously, paid search, the way that we see sponsored ads, the way that our search terms and our keywords bring up things is certainly how we research, and how that performs and what comes up is also based on credibility and authority. But it isn't just digital. There's also, I think, a role for recognizing the ways that traditional media, TV, radio, infomercials, billboards, out of home, all deliver a unified content value proposition. In healthcare, this is really important, because there are so many touch points where some prospective patient or consumer may come into contact with the brand of an organization, their specific language in talking about their services and offerings, whether it's procedures or conditions. And then I think print publications aren't dead, but how all these things come together in the minds of a consumer and help shape their behavior when they sit down to search something is an important dynamic. So it isn't limited to this list, obviously, but I think we recognize that a mix, a communications and marketing mix, is an ecosystem someone gathers information from, and then that helps shape their behavior online. I mentioned brand. It's important to really talk about brand in specific ways as it pertains to SEO, because a brand is many things. There's the quote that a brand is 1,000 little gestures, but in some ways, it's important to think about brand awareness. It's awareness. It's being aware that a brand is there. You may not have feelings about it, but you know about it. Brand equity involves a little bit more judgment. You have a sense of where its strengths are. It's beyond awareness, and it comes down to the degree of credibility, its personality, its core assets. And that can be visual assets, it can be a certain tone of voice, it can be a certain way of communicating that brand essence. that personality comes through. Positive or negative, these things determine a brand's equity. It's really important to think about this when we search, because when we search, all of the channels that we may have seen that have influenced us with their content, as well as the role of that brand in defining its authority and credibility, I think it's important because what we see, what we click on, is driven by those things. So why do users click? I think when you come down to it, we all go through this process where we evaluate a search engine results page, a SERP, and we look at the position and search results. The visual appeal of it, in other words, how does the description match our own expectations around that brand, around the service, around the condition? How familiar are we with it? I think there's a sense of credibility that comes with familiarity, but it's not the only thing. But I want to zero in on this word intent, because Grant has mentioned it a couple of times. Intent is really the magic word with SEO in many respects, because does the result match our intent? And when we think about what we click on, that to me is often, for me personally, what motivates me to act. So what other brands appear in the search results? How do we stack up? Sometimes it's a combination and a quick scan of all of these things. It's really interesting to think about how we go through this process, but why we click on what we click is usually a combination of these attributes. To demonstrate this, I think Grant and I wanted to highlight this example of how brand plays a specific role. In this case, it's with real estate. Do you want to speak to this, Grant?
Sure. I actually was working for one of these real estate companies, and I decided to find out why we weren't getting as many clicks when we thought we should do. Now, you showed on the previous slide a click curve. Now one would expect people in position one get more clicks than people in position two, get more clicks than people in position three, and that's generally how it works. And you can see this lower part of the chart where it says generic. That is just a generic listing of a 50% click-through rate when you're in position one, 15% position two, 25% in position three, 11% in position four. Now, there can be a slight bump there just because of what else is on the page, like some videos or other things like that. But we use that as kind of a baseline. And what we saw is when a brand is well-known, and Zillow certainly is a well-known real estate brand, that actually got 54% of a click-through rate when they're in position one. And folks like Trulia and Homes, less known, were obviously much less of a click-through rate when they're in position one. This really underscored to me at the time the question I wanted answered, which is, why aren't we getting as many clicks in position one? And this is obviously around who else is appearing in the search results. Now, sometimes you can, help your click-through rate by building up more brand equity and more brand awareness. Sometimes you just have to improve your search results so that what shows up is more aligned with the intent, to your point. And something that was really interesting we just saw with a client a couple of weeks ago was urgent care. And so we saw that the number two result was actually saying, wasn't an urgent care, it was saying cheaper than urgent care, to try and get the intent of people that might be looking at stuff from a cost standpoint. So, you can be really creative of what shows up in the search results, but you have to be really aware of who else is showing up as well. And I think this gives a really good indication of why brand is really important for that click-through rate, which equates to more traffic to your site.
So let's talk about content, because a good SEO strategy is really going to come down to content first and foremost. You know, this question of, do I need SEO? Well, it sometimes is a matter of thinking about what you need to say about your work, your conditions, your procedures, your offerings from a healthcare standpoint to patients and consumers, and how do you SEO that content? Well, the basics here are, content that has been optimized for SEO is really about designing it to rank in search engines for specific search terms and intents. So it should have a natural flow. It should feel naturally written by experts in that field. The content written for SEO is optimized around specific keywords, the topics, the entities, that user intent. It has to be relevant to the product, procedure, conditions at hand. But how do you do that? Ultimately, content needs to have a presence of high volume search terms, keywords. And I think that targeting the right intent of that query is a big part of that. So your research around high volume search keywords, integrating them appropriately through well-written content around the intent that a user has when they're searching is really about how you artfully balance these elements into the right flow. There are some myths that are worth talking about with content and SEO. There's been a belief for a long time, still in some corners, but early on, that length of content really was the most important thing, that with a certain volume of content, that you're just more likely to seem credible and that search engines are going to scan the content. It's not necessarily true. It's about solving the user's need, and we should define quality content through that lens. It's not a function of words on a page. The main priority for search algorithms is to fulfill that search intent beyond just the keywords. It could hurt your organic rankings to try and just go for length, to go for volume. It is useful to look at your competitive landscape, and we'll want to talk about that a little bit today, because how your competitors talk about things, their procedures, their conditions, their treatments, who they are, will ultimately give you an idea of what they're focusing on. And it could illuminate areas where you have opportunities to add content that they may not be. But keeping in mind this length myth is very important. You know, this idea of what time is it in London? You don't need to start from the beginning of time and go through the mechanics of what a clock is. They really just need to know that time. And that's a good instance of solving a specific issue for your users. Another myth is keyword counting. The example on the left is really a good demo of how it's not really good content if you're just stuffing it with language or keywords that is repetitive and is designed explicitly around a misguided approach to appeal to search engines. The truth is that they're not the only signal that search engines use to evaluate the quality, the relevance, the authority. And stuffing your page with keywords multiple times is called over-optimizing, and it can hurt your SEO performance. It makes the user experience and the reading experience awkward. Thorough, engaging content that answers the user's questions, fulfills their intent, is really the most important piece here. Grant, you want to talk a little bit more about content and SEO?
I do. And to be honest, you know, back in the day when I started SEO 20-something years ago, putting keywords on a page was everything you did multiple times, sometimes hidden at the same color as the page. So, yeah, these old hat type things are not working today. So what is working? So the best content. People often ask me, what is the best content for a particular treatment or condition? Well, Google actually defines best content every day, and every search they define the best content in their search results. So some of the best thing from a competitive analysis is to take the primary keyword that you have and put it into the search results and see what results come up. Now, it's not just great about defining who your competition might be, it's actually really good for understanding how Google's interpreting the intent of a specific query. So when you look at these things, these are how-tos. Generally, with a how-to, Google will present videos because more often than not, it's much easier to watch how to do X than it is to read how to do X. So if you're looking for what is the definition of the best content on the web, obviously you can search in Google and say that, but the best content on the web is what's found in search, and the best type of content, whether it's graphics, images, sound, music, lyrics, or whatever else, is defined in that search result. So if someone is searching for, you know, what does a rash on my elbow mean, it probably is great to have a bullet point of what it could mean, So that format would more likely or not appear in the search results as a bulleted list. So just think about that. The best content is defined by Google today, and it's found in their search results.
So getting into, I think, more details around the marketing mix, I think it really starts from a digital standpoint around paid and organic. So what is this relationship between paid search and SEO? So the importance is really in two areas. You have to connect them, both in terms of your strategy, your observation of data and keywords, because they cross-pollinate each other. And you start with your strategy, but from a process standpoint, it's really important for agencies or even in-house teams that are managing digital marketing to closely collaborate and to communicate on what the reporting, the performance, and data is showing. The reason why is that if you're running programs simultaneously, you can often see things from one channel, like organic, that helps inform what you're doing strategically with your keywords in another, like paid. And an example is, you know, existing website pages might rank organically for newer search trends without any paid activity. And an SEO report each month can show that. That then can highlight opportunities to go after queries on the paid side for newer terms. There may be an indication that competitors are not yet pursuing those terms, and there could be an opportunity. Identifying gaps, looking for opportunities, filling them in between these two is very important. This comes up all the time within our agency's work with clients. We do a monthly SEO reporting, looking at organic conversions and high-performing content pages, and we also do a paid search monthly report. And when we do this, it's always ideal to really look at trends that aren't necessarily captured in one channel because they could be incredibly useful in another. Our clients look for us to spot those things. And it's very important, I think, if you're not running one channel, to consider how the learnings from it could influence your introduction of a second channel like SEO or organic. Bottom line, keyword research with search data will inform SEO and often vice versa. We've included a link here too that shares some great case studies and data profiles around how click-through rates over time, really you can use both channels to close gaps. This is a quick quote. Grant shared a study with me recently. This is a mathematical study that isn't necessarily new, but it was a good demonstration of what I'm talking about. A combined click-through rate from paid and organic search listings when both options are available is going to be greater or equal to the click-through rate from the scenario where they're only organic search results. In other words, the two together collaborated. They overlapped. They helped fill in gaps. But it does require a great team to be able to see these trends, spot them, and know how to use them. Grant, I don't know if you wanted to add more to this particular quote.
Well, I was going to say that many companies I work with have basically said, well, I'm showing up for organic results. Why do I need to show up for paid results as well for the same query? And I think the answer is it's cumulative. It's not just one is going to cannibalize the other. What happens is you actually get a higher click-through rate on the page overall. So imagine 100 people searching, you get 50 clicks on organic. When you add in paid search as well, you might get 60 clicks. So it's not like you're actually cannibalizing, you're actually adding in additional clicks. And once again, it's a mathematical study. It's a long read. Was it 20 pages? But it basically did across a broad range of many different queries. So it does depend on the industry. And obviously you have a lot more control over what shows up in paid search results than you do in organic results, because you're actually, you know, when you're using Google, you're actually defining what it is you want to show up for and how that looks. But I think it's additive because you're reinforcing the brand, number one. You're creating some familiarity in that search result when people see two different results there. But also, I think, and they didn't have an exact idea here, but I think it's just people, as they scroll down a page, they stop where they see something that they're already seen. So Sometimes that idea of seeing a paid search result at the top, as you scroll down, you see the organic, go, oh, okay, these guys must know what they're talking about subconsciously. But definitely worth a while to leverage organic traffic, organic data for paid, and vice versa. All right. We're going to talk about another channel here, digital PR. I'll define digital PR. It's like traditional PR. They share one goal in common. That's helped, you know, improve the reputation or increase the visibility of a particular brand. And I think it's really, really important when we look at the two different channels of traditional PR and digital PR. Obviously, one is online. So, you know, we have slightly different metrics there. You know, from traditional PR, it's around, you know, reach, impressions, frequency, things like that. It can be the same metrics online, but our key goal is how much visibility can we get? How many impressions can we get, either direct impressions of an ad or a piece of content, or subconscious? When I say subconscious, it's, you know, when ads appear on the side of a page, people still see that in their periphery. It can still have an impression-based approach to it. But I think, you know, the key thing about digital PR is we're not just looking at impressions and frequency. We are looking at other things like links and mentions and things like that to help improve our SEO. So next slide, please. So a lot of people say, you know, when we're doing digital PR, which is obviously promoting content online, you know, getting it featured on other websites online, you know, what are the metrics that we should be looking at? A lot of people look at domain authority, so DA, or, you know, domain relevancy or things like that. You know, certainly from an SEO standpoint, we're looking at building authority. That's really one of the key things for us. Now, authority means we're getting links from other sites. So links are definitely one of the metrics we look at. But if something's getting a link but it's not getting any traffic, that's probably not relevant. So we also look at traffic. And then brand, we're really looking at where we're featured, because there's often an association of reputation from where you're featured. So if I'm featured on the New York Times, that has a certain, I say eloquence, but a certain elevation to it that says, oh, these guys are featured on New York Times. They must have some authority around the topic they're talking about. So from my standpoint, it really is about visibility and awareness. It's about traffic, because that implies that it's actually valuable to the users. And then backlinks is, for me, a secondary metric. So, you know, building authority is about getting links from topically relevant sites. And we're looking always at building authority of our own sites around the treatments, conditions, you know, procedural expertise or things like that. One last point here is we tend to say in SEO that more high quality links, you know, from those sites, those authoritative sites like Forbes or Mayo Clinic or things like that, those high quality links are worth more. They are worth more in the scheme of Google's algorithm. It hasn't changed. It was built on the quality of links. It hasn't really changed that much. You know, and generally, that is better than a lot of low quality links, often from guest blogs or something like that, that are not topically relevant. They kind of cover lots of different topics. So when we're assessing the value out of our digital PR, we'll also look at the alignment and the affinity of sites that link to us. All right. So link-worthy content. Another question I ask, I get asked a lot of questions, but another question I ask is, what is link-worthy content? Now, we are all consumers, and generally we all share content on social media, and sometimes we share content that we see online. Something link-worthy is something that's interesting to you and you believe will be interesting to other people within your circle. So what is link-worthy content? Generally, it is content that can generate the links and engagement and traffic. That's our success metrics. You know, but it's also around that buzz you can create. Link-worthy to me is content that stands out from the crowd. These are three examples that I created at my old job here. We're looking at data-driven stuff. So where you can get data and visualize it in a different way. That first image is about I can't read that because I don't have my glasses on. There you go. Hold on. So it's about the tech cities. So it was something where we looked at the different elements around remote working, around the availability of high-speed internet and all that stuff to come up with data points around what's the most tech city. The second one was tied into pop culture, which was Star Wars. We did City Wars, where we put cities against each other to kind of come up with a metric of the light or the dark side of cities. So it's fun. It got a lot of engagement, a lot of links. The last one was the friendliest boroughs in New York City, where we did surveys of about 2,000 people in New York. What's the friendliest and everything else? Why is this a great example? Because we got picked up by the local television station because it was link-worthy and newsworthy. And we had the mayor of the Bronx defend the fact that the Bronx was the least friendly place in New York, according to the survey. So all these things are about creating buzz around your brand. And in the medical space, it is just as easy to find stuff that, you know, aligns with any of the privacy concerns, but it still is really interesting and unique for your brand. So digital PR is a really important part of where SEO can meet the traditional, you know, PR and media and visibility. And then a lot of people also ask me, what is a bad link? Is there a bad link? So these are three examples of large brands, BMW, Home Depot, and Washington Post, that were penalized, a manual penalty from Google for building quote unquote bad links. So, you know, link building where you're trying to manipulate Google's search results by buying or influencing people to have links with certain attributes is against Google's guidelines. And the worst case scenario on a bad link is that you can get banned from Google. Some of these folks were dropped out of Google Index completely. They got it back. Some of them, the pages they created with the links going to them were taken out of the index, so could not drive traffic. So I think the thing here is you can earn a manual penalty by doing the wrong thing. This is where SEO can help inform a link building strategy or a link outreach strategy to make sure that you're aligning with Google best practices and Google guidelines.
And it's important, I think, if you're ever thinking about working with an agency, you know, it's vital to evaluate and ask about methods, because there are lots of agencies that have what we would call black hat link strategies as part of their approach to try and juice short-term organic results. But in the end, it can really penalize and hurt you. Our agency has a very straightforward approach that reflects, I think, a lot of the best practices we're going through today. And this is just sort of a cautionary note. So when we think about the mix in your marketing picture, SEO plays a vital role, but what is the mix? It's going to be different for every organization. It's going to be a combination of print. It's going to be a combination of digital. And ultimately, you need to have a good understanding of your strategy for reaching out to audiences, defining your brand, and making sure that that brand and what it means to your audiences is reflected in every choice that you make. So the marketing mix ultimately can be put together with these four P's, this framework that's maybe familiar to you, but it's a great way of defining your product. Essentially, what is it that you are offering to consumers, whether it's a service in healthcare, a procedure, an offering of some type, the price, where does it fall? What does it cost them? How is that a value proposition or not? Is it worth it? The platforms, that's really what we've talked a lot about today. The places, the platforms, the places, this third P is ultimately that choice of where you best find your audiences and speak to them where they are. It's not going to be one place in many instances. We all use the internet, we all search keywords, and we all look for products and services. So we've focused today's effort on digital channels, but everything plays a role, and an integrated, truly integrated marketing mix will include a range of things that reflect the consuming behavior of your patients and the people you're trying to reach. Promotion, what are your choices? How do we use the right language, the right offers to reach them and find a way to stand out from competition? This is why brand strategy and defining your own equity, if you will, your own personality, and that part of your strategy is important, because you need to know what your stake in the ground is compared to someone who's right next to you, who may be in your marketplace. They may be a bigger player, they may be an emerging challenger, but how do you promote to stand apart from them with your messaging? And how can that trickle into your SEO strategy as well? So the four P's really are your consideration to define the perfect marketing mix. A big part of this is competitive research. We've talked about competitors in this presentation, but ultimately the questions here are vital for determining what to look for in what your competitors have. What is their level of brand awareness and equity? Again, are they big, well-established, entrenched, well-known, small? How do they communicate who they are on their homepage? You know, Grant has been a good advocate of just saying sometimes that alone is a great way of determining what we're working with in terms of a competitor or how we frame our own story and narrative. So who are your competitors in your category? Who are your search competitors? In other words, who are you up against the same types of terms that you're trying to rank for? How are they organizing their sites around conditions, treatments, patient information? How a website is structured is sometimes really important as well, because the clarity of how you deliver content in a user experience, top to bottom, in that website information architecture, it can be distinct, it can be very well organized, sometimes it can be more fluid. Really important to look at competitor sites to see how they're doing it so that you can improve on it and really stand out. Ultimately, that site organization and taxonomy is a big thing too, because you want to make sure that search terms are reflected in your site navigation and in that taxonomy, because that will be the wayfinding system for any user on your site. And can you see keyword strategies when you look at your competitor's content? When you look at a treatment or a condition page on a competitor website, what are they saying about it? How are they using specifics to really fulfill the user's intent? Because if they're not doing a good job, identifying ways to improve on it is really the key. How can you do better? Anything else you'd like to say on the competitive research, Grant?
No, it's an integral part. And the first thing we do is discovery phase, just to make sure we understand. I think you hit nail on the head here. It's what do your competitors want to show up for? I think if you look at someone's homepage, you can see immediately based on the main header on the page, the title of the page, the sections that are within the main top navigation, you can understand pretty much what they're trying to rank for. We don't assume everyone knows what they're trying to rank for, but you know, we find the best people and we try and do better than them. So no, hit the nail on the head there.
In the end, I think we really liked the idea of sharing this topic with you today, because when you think about all these considerations, all the channels, all the ways that you can think about putting a marketing mix together, SEO does play a role pretty consistently for any business, in that it really gives you the ability to understand questions from consumers and patients. I think the way that people search and that intent and what you see in terms of organic traffic and conversions is the best way to understand what content matters and what matters to these patients and consumers. You know, you can get a lot of good insight around your own brand discovery and visibility. It really helps that. It builds authority for your brand, because over time, I think you can become a presence in ways that speaks to your credibility, your importance, and that reputation is valuable. As we said, the interrelationship between paid search and SEO is undeniable. They really can go hand in hand. They inform each other. And then finally, I think that for people who are newer to you, that you may be trying to reach out to for the first time, SEO, it really can elevate your content for people who are just at the beginning, who are at that process where they're just starting out and looking. A good SEO strategy will help meet them along the way.
Yeah, can I add one thing there? We talk about authority. Authority, a lot of people say, well, I'm not a national brand, I'm a local brand. And I think what's key is being an authority can be a location-based authority for a specific medical specialty, not just showing up in New York when you're in California. It's actually showing up in that location you're in. So an authority, a topic authority, has the temporal nature of it from a time standpoint and a geo factor to it as far as location. So being an authority is far more than being a national or international authority. It's about being an authority in the place you want to be as well. And this is kind of our wrap, which is that if you are doing any marketing, not having SEO as part of that mix is a large gap in understanding the competitive environment online, as well as understanding how people are searching, period. Whether they're driving past a billboard and they see your website, or whether they see on TV something that says, search for XYZ to find us. You know, SEO is an integral part and can amplify almost any channel in a way that makes sense from a content standpoint, a messaging standpoint, or any number of different things. So our big takeaway from this, apart from how to do some of these things, is really about making sure SEO is an integral part of your marketing mix, no matter where you are, what you're treating customers you're serving, or whether you're B2B or B to patient. We want to make sure that SEO is there to make sure your message in front of the right people at the right time with the right intent.
We want to thank everyone for joining us today. I think that this is a deep topic. We're very passionate about it. And I think we want to extend an offer to each of you or your colleagues or people in your networks. Many organizations understand who they are, who they're trying to reach, but they may not always have access to that SEO data or paid digital data to help inform their first or next steps. That's a way of saying, I think we can be that partner that can look at data, that can look at your overall performance and push it forward, improve your performance over time, both for organic and potentially for paid. But I think we really want to make sure that you understand also that we can provide a free SEO checkup to you and your organization if you want to reach out to us. We'd love to get to know you, to probe into your business, and to see if there are opportunities for us to improve your SEO performance over time.
Right. And there is a few questions here, Paul.
Yep. Yeah, let's dive into questions. I wanted to make sure we had a few extra moments for that.
Hey, Ben. All right. So what percentage of people who search subspecialty on mobile, such as orthopedics, schedule an appointment? Great question. So we have some of that data, but it really is across the board. Our goal is to shoot for 10% or above when someone's searching. But remember, there's a research phase that people go through. And sometimes we're looking at what we call micro conversions. So having something additional on that page, like a downloadable information sheet or something like that, to judge the interest of someone. So I don't have the exact percentage. The other data was from a Google study, but we're definitely going for 10% or above as being a measure of success. But calls to action on pages are generally missing. And so when we first look at a page, we're trying to assess whether it's missing a relevant, relatable, and valuable offer for someone to book an appointment. Paul, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think that's good. Let's go to the next one.
Okay.
Clearing up the word count myth. How is that even manageable? Well, I think first off, some of the steps that we captured today can help give you a picture of what length probably looks appropriate. Now, some of that is looking at competitors. How are they doing it? They may be doing it wrong, but you have to think carefully about how can you answer a basic question without extraneous information. When someone may be looking for information on varicose veins, for example, or a certain type of post-traumatic stress disorder therapy, you have to think carefully about, are you giving them full exposition of the issue from top to bottom, or are you really talking specifically about what you do, your approach, and how you can do that in the most succinct, keyword-driven way possible. And usually that endpoint is not going to be a dissertation that's so long that it's unreadable. It'll probably be an authentic, expert-driven content segment. And if you've also done your keyword research that is relevant to those keywords and the services that you provide. Grant,
yeah, I want to add a little bit to that is, you know, looking at a page from a sectionized standpoint. So looking at the relevant sections that exist within a page. You mentioned keywords a few times there. We're really looking at queries, which is how people are searching. So it's not like the traditional, this is the one word people are searching for, you know, CPTSD. They're going to be searching for questions like, you know, how do I know if I have a traumatic, you know, disorder or anything like that? So when we're looking at that, we're trying to make sure we understand the question, number one. That's through keyword research, seeing how people are searching, and then making sure we fully answer that question. And the sections, I mean, you laid out pretty good, you know, what is the problem? What might it be? What might be the solution be? You know, what's the procedure and things like this? Those are natural sections within the page, and it does not rely on word count at all. It relies on making sure each of those sections is relevant and relatable to that particular topic, and it fully answers the question that someone might have when they're searching for that particular page information. So how is it manageable? The way I look at it is define the sections, answer the questions, and then build the content. So it's not word count, it's essentially information satisfaction. Is that okay?
Next question was, what is an example of a bad link?
A bad link would be a link from a electronics website or electronics article going to your hospital talking about, you know, cancer, for want of a better thing there. But it would be something that is not relevant. So a link from a site that's not relevant, from content that's not relevant, to a page that obviously has tried to game the system. The other attribute we look for to define a bad link is anchor text that obviously is out of place. Anchor text is the clickable link from an actual link. So if the anchor text is very keyword focused, like it says, knee pain on a page that's about, you know, doing work around your house, and they've inserted, and you might get knee pain from gardening, you know, that is not a relevant link from a relevant page with anchor text that is natural. So remember,
they're not easy to find. You know, an uglier form of a bad link might appear in, you know, a comment section of a website on a media site or a discussion forum, where suddenly there's a link to Caribbean cruise special offers, and the topic is something entirely different.
That's generally a way of doing it. I mean, the thing is, if you're paying for a link, it's a bad link.
Yeah. Next question.
Okay.
How often do you revisit competitor research? Is there a cadence that this should fall to ensure that you are on the right track for SEO?
Always be looking at competition. So whenever you're building out a new section, a new page, you're going to conduct competitive research. So you might not be doing it on the very highest level topic, but you're doing it for every subtopic within the site. Paul, did you?
Yeah, I would also just add, Grant is absolutely right. It should be constant. If you're setting an SEO strategy and doing competitive research at that stage, every 6 months is sort of a good cadence, because it allows for enough time for natural evolution to happen within your category. Sometimes organizations rebrand, they shift their areas of focus. They may dial up or down procedures or offerings or services strategically. And having a read on that is very important. 6 months is a good marker. In some industries, it may even need to be more frequent, potentially every quarter.
Okay. Can you speak to the use of SEO in social media? Is this possible and how does it work? Okay. So social media is not used as one of the ranking factors, Google has said many times, but it's really useful for content discovery. So without a shadow of a doubt, social media helps with driving links and traffic to a particular site. So when I say links, we're not talking about link equity, because most social media sites do not give value to links coming from them. But what it does, it allows your content to be discovered. So using social media effectively for new, unique content, messaging, and everything else is definitely something I would recommend. But once again, you have to have something that's high value content that people are likely to share to give your brand additional visibility, your content of additional visibility, and to drive traffic to your site, which ultimately is one of the key indicators of success. All right. I think we've got one last one. Well, anonymous attendee said, great presentation. You're welcome. And then Laurie, hi. How about word count for blog posts? Is it the same as for informational web pages? All right. So word count period does not matter at all. As long as you're answering the query. However, more often than not, it's used internally to say how long should a blog post be, or to cost it out from a standpoint of price per word. So it's kind of a holdover from that. So I would say, from a blog post standpoint, blog posts should be there to support your primary informational pages. So they're more temporal from a time standpoint. They're more conversational generally. We're talking about blog posts generally. So word count not as important at all on any kind of content you create. However, if you're more conversational, generally a blog post is going to be a little bit more wordy than an informational page. But just think of that from a standpoint. Normally, it's just guidance around competitive research that says, a blog post on this topic generally has between 500 and 750 pages, purely guidance, not a mandate. And generally, just gives a good idea around pricing cost or time it takes to write. All right.
Great.
Yeah, really good questions. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. For me, thank you, everyone. And please feel free to reach out if you'd like to get a free checkout. We'd love to take a look at your site, give you some insights into what we find, what might be holding you back, what might be brilliant, and just quick look at your homepage generally and seeing if that is focusing and positioning your brand, your services and products exactly how Google wants to see it. But really appreciate the time today, Paul.
Thank
It's
you,
always.
everyone. We really enjoyed it. We hope you did too. And we'd love to continue the conversation with each of you if we can. Thank you.
And this will be available on our website if anyone wants to see the recording. So thanks very much, guys. Cheers.